From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? Joining me, as always, my partner in crime, the one, the only, Roger Mitchell. Roger, where are you?
Hi, I'm in Como. Good evening, or good morning. Where are you? You're in the Caribbean?
I'm in the Cayman Islands as of today. I wasn't yesterday, and I won't be in a couple of days, but I'm here for the time.
But you did miss the earthquake, and we saw some footage.
I missed the earthquake, yes.
Of our colleague James, shake, rattle, yep. And roll.
Yeah, I missed the earthquake and the resultant tsunami, which apparently did come through, but was about 8 inches high. So it was barely noticed, thank God, because Cayman is
no
a
protection.
Completely flat sandbar. So when people say get to high ground, it means stand on a chair, basically. So yes, I missed all that, missed all the fun and games there. But didn't miss all the fun and games in the world of sport this week.
Oh, so much to talk about.
Plenty to talk about.
Where do you want to start? You start this week. Where do you want to start?
Okay, you know what? Perfect. I'm going to start. I'm going to start with my goal of the week. And my goal this week, perfect timing, as we record this, we are still basking in the afterglow of the Super Bowl, which was last night. It's Monday today. And the victorious Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot in this podcast about Joe Burrow and, you know, what a not just a tremendous athlete he is, but what a fine young man.
Yeah.
And, you know, that the pendulum seems, thankfully, to be swinging away from kind of arrogant superstar athletes and back towards wholesome athletes who are just as good people as they are athletes. And I saw a story on Twitter, which was posted by a friend of mine called Don Yeager this week, about Patrick Mahomes, which speaks to what a fantastic young man he is. And obviously, there's been a lot of press about Mahomes this last week. He's been a phenomenal athlete all year, but everybody's saying what a great guy he is and what a down-to-earth kid. So I wanted to share this story with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this tweet. It says, a few weeks back, Patrick Mahomes and his girlfriend were having dinner at a pizza place near their home in Kansas City. Obviously, everyone there recognized them, but nobody interrupted them at all, allowing them to enjoy a peaceful meal. They paid their bill and started to head out the door, and still nobody's jumping up to ask for a selfie or an autograph or anything. Pat stops at the door, turns back, and everyone looks up. He says to the entire restaurant, "Thanks for letting us enjoy our dinner. This is why I love Kansas City. You guys are awesome." After he and Brittany left, it was revealed that they'd paid the bill for every table. Now, isn't that a fantastic story? Right?
Wow.
Isn't that just a wonderful example of the kind of things that you can do as an athlete to kind of give back in little ways? It's not a big deal to him, I'm sure, picking up 15 pizzas. But what a great example of what a fine young man he is. I was just blown away like that. So simple, so authentic, and just good people.
Well, interestingly, do you think Kansas City is in some way, well, by the way, in Missouri, I'd like to add.
Yes.
Do you think Kansas City is in some way special as a place where they've got this kind of like reverence for their stars and they don't bother them in this day and age?
Well, I think it's a, I mean,
you know America better than me.
People in Kansas City, Missouri, don't hate me for this, but it is a smaller market. It's that simple, right? It's not New York. It's not Los Angeles. And so it's there's something about being in the middle of the United States that's the kind of people you'll find when you travel around that part of the world, and I think it is it's much more of a small town mentality, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way at all, quite the opposite. I think away from the brash and the spotlight and the glare of the big media centers where everybody feels like they should be just as famous as the stars. I don't know. There's something about it. It kind of takes you back to a different time where, you know, people respected other people's privacy. And, you know, let's face it, here's a he's an athlete. He's just having a dinner, a private dinner with his family. And I thought it was a wonderful story, reaction of the people from Kansas City, but also, you know, the way he and his girlfriend handled it. Just, you know, he could have walked out and said nothing. He could have just walked out and said thanks. But he nailed every single part of that. And I just thought it was fantastic.
Well, you know, let me continue a little bit with the Super Bowl, because, you know, what struck me about watching that last night and then this morning is something that we've talked about in the last three or four podcasts and goal on goal, things like that. This word polarization, this word, you know, the big events will be fine, the other ones will need to find a new model. What I thought when I watched the Super Bowl last night, and I'm talking about the Super Bowl as entertainment, not necessarily the four quarters, is this: in sports, do not be mediocre. There is no market for mediocre, and the bar is exceptionally.
Are you really telling that to a Fulham fan?
Well, this is why I wanted to talk to you about this, because let me just go through what struck me about the Super Bowl as an entertainment product to compete with the highest that there is around. In no particular order, the video of the 100 years of the NFL, where they showed you all the old players, just wonderful shoulder content. Then you had the NFL just before the game having the little kids. Did you see him? You know, the take it home video. Did you see that,
yeah,
Grant?
Yeah.
And like, you know, he's rushing like a madman because he's been told to. He's doing all the moves, and then coming back to your point about maybe the worm is turning about good guys and bad guys and morals and how a sportsman should be. The only reason he stops running is for the Pat Tillman statue, you know? And maybe some people listening to this don't know who that is. And in some ways, a little bit controversial character, but this is a chap who was a major NFL star and after 9/11 enlisted into the military and went for 3 years to the military. And I may be wrong here, but I think he actually died.
He died in service, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe it was friendly fire, maybe it wasn't. It doesn't matter. So beautiful video there and done really, really well. The ads, you know, everybody seems to be pulling out their best card for the Super Bowl. The Google ad, you know, Groundhog Day, the Budweiser Act ad, the typical America. And of course, the best one, given the context, would be the Microsoft one for Katie Sawyers, the coach of the 49ers.
49ers, yeah.
You know, one better than the other. And then, you know, you've got, and this resonates with me coming from the music industry, you've got, you know, Demi Lovato, who, you know, she came back at the Grammys. And she sang this song and arguably the star of the night. And, you know, even more poignant when you see her tweet from many, many years ago saying, maybe one day I'll sing at the Super Bowl. Again, some people may not know, but this girl became famous quite young in life and she's had all kinds of substance abuse issues. She's basically an alcoholic. And this is probably about the second time she's come back and she does it there last night. Fantastic. Then you've got, you know, when she's doing that, you've got the celebrity, what they call beef these days, that Beyonce and Jay-Z didn't stand up when the anthem was on and supporting her. And that had a whole meme going. And, you know, the halftime show. Do we want to talk about the halftime show?
I suspect I'm not going to be able to talk you out of talking about it.
I mean, it doesn't get any higher than that at the bar. You know, Shakira. Honestly, you know, just it's as good as it gets. Trust me, that's as good as it gets. And, you know, whilst J-Lo was great, I wouldn't have wanted to have come on after Shakira.
Can I ask you, Roger? I was watching an overseas feed. It wasn't great quality. I was ended up watching it on my laptop, but it looked to me like Shakira was lip syncing.
I would be surprised if that was the case.
I could tell J-Lo wasn't. But I honestly don't know, and I'm you know.
Well, I'll Google it after this.
Either way, but it looked to me as though she was lip syncing.
Well, she might not have been lip syncing when she did that whole tongue thing. Did you see that?
Yes.
I mean that must be the highlight of the evening, or the twerking. You know, I don't know which one it is. Do you know what I mean? And
well, it depends for you potentially.
And then, you know, you get people coming on, Grant, and you know, they say, "Oh, this is too sexy. This is, you know, can't they cover up? This is primetime television. I need to put my kids to bed." I don't remember anybody saying anything about that when Adam Levine was last year strutting around in exactly the same way, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, as entertainment, as an event, as modern prime sport, that's where you have to be. And as I say, if you want to compete in that market, don't be mediocre. You don't be in the middle. Now, the opposite is you go local and community and, you know, as you said earlier, Fulham, you know, is a different market completely. But this is my point. Sport is totally polarizing. And last night you saw what it is at its highest level. And, you know, I just want your reaction to that. How do you think your team, what your club represents, what Simon Hallett at Plymouth represents, and all the other people we know that have got a love for sport at a smaller local community amateur level, how do you think these two coexist these days, Grant?
Well, I tell you what, I nothing would give me greater pleasure than to see J-Lo pull the winning ticket in the meat raffle out at halftime at Plymouth Argyle. I think if Simon Hallett can pull that off, that would be
That's absolutely epic.
Hey, listen, we had Sharon Osborne pull the winning lottery ticket at Fulham at halftime once. I don't mind telling you that. It was actually the week after the she and Ozzy had famously been burgled, and she'd had apparently like £1 million of jewellery stolen. And the Fulham fans, as she came out onto the pitch, started singing to the tune of Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep, "Where's your jewellery gone?" which I thought was a little harsh, but funny.
She did laugh.
But no, look, yeah. to your point, I mean, look, yeah. The halftime show is always, it's always a great show. I mean, I've enjoyed just about all of them that I've seen, to be honest with you. I was kind of joking last night with a mate of mine on text about how sexist the show was that they had just female performers on there.
I thought
it was great. I really did think it was great. And I'd say I thought it looked like Shakira was lip syncing. Not that it matters. I'm curious more than anything else. I know Lady Gaga in the lead up to the Super Bowl had said, you know, "I better not see any lip syncing from you two." Whether that was a joke or not, I don't know. But again, you know, for me, I want to watch the game, and the halftime is what? Third? God. Well, look, Roger, listen, it's just me. It's just me. I think it's great.
14 minutes halftime.
14?
Yeah. 14 minutes, that show.
Well, okay, so it felt a lot longer than that.
That's unbelievable.
I'm not criticizing it. When I saw her there with that rope,
and like it took me back to that George Clooney like film.
I don't want to know where it took you back to.
You know, Selma Hayek. You know,
I don't want to know where it took you back to.
Fucking show.
You were talking about Dusk Till Dawn, yeah?
Yeah. And yeah, the Heath when she comes out there. Honestly, and then the tongue thing with the microphone. I mean, there was a whole lot going on there, and like the Twitter was like a lot, and Instagram they were alive after it. And, you know, the point I'm making is that it's not just, this is the real point, the serious point I'm making. I think the way it's going is all this stuff around the outside, and you can probably take the actual game and just leave it at highlights because, you know, at the end of the day, you could watch the game itself in probably about 7 minutes.
And this is interesting to me because I totally get your point, and I don't wholly disagree with you, but I think it's interesting that the spectacle around the game is getting more and more and more important.
Yep.
At exactly the time when, if Patrick Mahomes is anything to go by, and Jimmy Garoppolo, the other quarterback, the stars of the sport are getting less and less flamboyant and less flashy, and they seem to be being marketed based on what good guys they are. You know, they're just about, they're solid, they're good guys, they've got incredible athletic skills, but the bling and the flash seems to be going away. You know, it's interesting to me that is interesting. The pizzazz around the game is being beefed up, just as to promote the athletes. It seems to be about consciously talking less about that and more about, you know, the real people inside. So it's an interesting thing for me to watch evolve, I have to say.
Just from the point of view of the entertainment content, if you want to call it that, I know you don't like to do it. It's very clear to me the way it's going, Grant. This is the thing. You know, as I say, do not dare be mediocre or normal or middle of the road in sport. If you want to not aspire to premium or you can't aspire, let's have a look at something else that's happened this week in Barstool. Barstool was sold to a betting company. Again, some people may not know who Barstool is. It's basically a little media company that was created around the fans of the Boston sports franchises. It's very, very laddish. It's been criticized for many people, run by a woman, by the way, misogynist, sometimes even racist, and it's very basic in terms of it'll put on, you know, normal blokes, you know, fighting each other and things like that. It's the opposite of what we saw last night, but it went for $500 million, Grant.
Yeah, right.
And it went to a betting company. And the same week that we've got virtue signaling, as we mentioned in the last podcast, by the British government because they don't like the fact that the FA Cup has done a deal with
Bet365.
You know, and this is my point. You know, the models are going to change. Polarization is here. Last night won't have any issues finding monetization routes, but everybody else will. And the reality is that betting is a big, big part of that, if not the cornerstone. And we've got our government and other people, the same in other countries as well, saying this is a problem. Well, you know, say that properly then. Say that you want sport to survive at the lowest levels, English hockey or whatever it is, rugby league, but you mustn't touch betting. Say it out loud, but don't, you know, then use the same thing this week. Sorry if this is a bit of a rant. Somebody went on about KP sponsoring, I think it's the 100 or something like that in cricket. And they said, can we not find a better sponsor? It's not as if these sponsors are like hanging on every tree you pass. It's a really tough gig finding a sponsor these days and finding revenue models. And I just don't think people understand that things are going to have to change quite a lot, and you should be helping people to find a way to promote and foster the various sports rather than just put obstacles in their way. So, you know, look at Barstool, look who they sold to and why that's a perfect fit. And then maybe we can talk about where sport goes from here.
Well, this is a perfect segue to talk about someone else I wanted to talk about. And as I couldn't put it in a goal or an own goal. But what do you know about the XFL?
Is that women that play in bikinis?
It's not that, no. The XFL is kind of a it's a poor man's NFL, and don't at me about that. That's the easiest way I can think of to describe it. And in fact, Donald Trump used to have an XFL team back in the day, but it was a league that has kind of folded, I think, a couple of times and back. And back in 2018, they talked about relaunching the XFL in 2020. And who else is involved in it but your buddy Vince McMahon? And back in 2020, there's an advert, and we'll tweet this out at Entertained R. We'll tweet these two links out. But there's a link that I was looking at from back in January 2018, and it was about, you know, this is not the past, this is the future. They were saying, right? They were talking, it's going to be quicker, it's going to be simpler, simpler rules. This is your game, right? This is football reborn. They're saying. Now, interestingly, they talked about it as padded roulette, make a trade, they're linking in fantasy with it, make a move, you know, less stall, more ball, fewer infractions. Yeah, there was a whole thing about this, right?
Yeah.
This was back in 2020. And here we are in 2020, and it's about to launch again. And so there's an advert that I saw. I was in the US this week, and I saw an advert on ESPN for the relaunched XFL. And it's very, very interesting, right? They're talking about more football. And it's a big shiny advert with lots of flashing images and, you know, team logos and players and all kind of stuff. But the way they push it, you know, new rules, double forward pass, shootout style overtime. and it has a faster pace, shorter play clock, fewer timeouts, all access, mic'd up players and coaches, getting the fans closer. This is exactly what you've been talking about for 2 years now. I mean, exactly to your point, this is about taking a sport, completely changing it, reimagining it, changing the rules, changing every single aspect of this game to make it appeal to the modern fan. And what do they want? They want it shorter. They want access. Mm. They want all the things that you've been banging mm-hmm. on about. And it launches, I think, February the 8th, I think, the new league starts. So this is something that I know you and I will watch very closely, because this is the perfect acid test of what you're talking about. You know, the XFL is very similar in nature to the NFL. It's smaller, smaller pitches, some different variations of rules. But you have to assume that if this thing takes off, and I think there's only 8 teams at launch, but if this thing takes off, the NFL is going to have to look very seriously after, you know, spending 4 hours watching the Super Bowl last night. They're going to have to think very seriously about what this means.
Yeah, no doubt, Grant, nothing to argue about there. You know, I get asked to participate in some of these new formats quite a lot in startup form. So I see this all the time, and I see the decks, and they're all the same in terms of what the why, the how is slightly different, et cetera, et cetera. But even think about the new, what do you think about the new golf league? You know, do you not think that's a great idea, where they're going to take the top players, maybe even take them out of the main tours and put them into what looks something very similar to what Eddie and Barry Hearn have done in darts? You know, I can't say this strongly enough. The next 5 years are going to dictate the next 25. The game is on. Everything's up for grabs. And you still get people saying, oh, we don't think betting should be the right partner, or KP snacks. It really makes me laugh, mate. It's happening right in front of our eyes. Everything's changing, sports media changing, sport tech. And people are still as if they're having a G&T at the MCC. It's astonishing, mate.
Well, look, it is. The Golf League is interesting. You know, we've talked about this before, but this is what Greg Norman was trying to do back in the late 80s, early 90s, right? And it caused all kinds of problems, and it ended up leading to the WGC events. We saw it with Kerry Packer with cricket in the 70s and 80s. This seems to be an inevitable direction for these things to go at some point, when people figure out how to make money out of it. And it generally is by taking the best players and putting them in a place where they can corral the audience and charge them to watch.
Of course,
them.
I mean, it is.
You know, you got, but particularly golf. You know, you take the top 50 players out of golf, and let's be honest, the level of ability doesn't drop much.
No.
Down to player 51 to under 25. But nobody's going to watch it. They're just not. It's that simple.
Well, you remember, and I took a lot of heat on this from you and also the captain when we were talking about the Open back in the summer. I said, these are nobodies in the last round. Nobody knows who they are. It's a procession because he's so far ahead.
Disagree. I disagree then. I disagree now. The
league is here. No, they're not, Grant.
No.
They are for you, for the normal young kid. They're not going to do this anymore. They are not.
Yeah, but Rog, there's no way the top 50 players are not going to play in the majors. There's no way.
We'll find a different format. You cannot have nobody journeyman professionals just because maybe, as we had an argument the other day, they got lucky with the weather, that find themselves in the last two or three groupings in a major tournament just because either they got a hot putter or the weather wind changed. That's not going to work, Grant. It's why the Champions League is the way it is now, because in the old days, Napoli drew Real Madrid in the first round and one of them got knocked out. Nottingham Forest drew Liverpool in the first round and one of them got knocked out. That doesn't work. It's just not going to be acceptable. Golf still thinks that's acceptable. This league will take it out of their hands because that isn't acceptable.
Well, I think we're talking at cross purposes. My point is the majors are different. You're never going to have a bunch of journeymen only in the majors, and even if you end up on the fourth round with a bunch of journeymen at the top of the leaderboard, I don't think the audience is going to drop off that much simply because of the prestige of those four tournaments. But I think those four tournaments are unique, and I don't think it applies to any other tournament. So I take your point, But I would struggle to be concerned about the four major championships. I really would. I don't think the top players would ever stop playing them. And B, I think they have enough audience attraction without the top players being in contention. There's always a story there.
Well, let me push back in the most jousting way we can. I'm sure many people, this was going to be my own goal, but it's a perfect segue. I'm sure many people would have said the same about the FA Cup 25 years ago. Oh, that will always be special. Oh, that will never lose its allure. And now, by the way, who's the sponsor of the FA Cup, Grant?
Yeah, Roger, honestly, I don't know.
There you go. That's my point.
That's
my point. It's the Emirates. Nobody knows that.
You know what? I did know that. You're right.
That's the point.
But hang on. But bear in mind, I've watched all my FA Cup games in America on American coverage.
My point is this. Jurgen Klopp not only is playing a second string team, he's not even in the dugout. He's not even coaching the team. So de facto, it has become an under-23 tournament for him. Now, we had Andy Sutherland on, and I gave him the same hard time about the League Cup and why sponsors shouldn't get anywhere near it. And now we've got the FA Cup basically trashed by the top team in England and in Europe. And this is my point. Nobody would have said this 20, 30 years ago, and now it doesn't matter to anybody. You know, and I'm not just talking about the top four or the ones going for Champions League. I'm talking about Norwich, who need to save themselves. I'm talking about the teams that need to try and get up, like a Brentford. Nobody cares. And that is because the argument we've just had has happened over the last 20 years, and people said, no, we'll be okay with that. And before you know it, it's gone. And I see this happening in golf. I think we speak again in 5 years. I'm not sure you've got four majors.
Oh yeah, I'll take that bet with you all day long. But talking about the football, where does that apathy come from? Because
money.
I think the apathy comes from the top down. It comes from the FA deprioritizing that, or the FA and the Premier League between them deprioritizing the FA Cup. I don't think it comes from the fans. The fans still want to win the FA Cup, right? The fans would still love a day out at Wembley to win the FA Cup, but the organisations have deprioritised it. And when they're sorting schedules out, they could give two rats' asses about the FA Cup, right? They don't hold it sacred anymore. And that's,
I don't think that's true, Grant.
From the top down.
Wait, I think you're putting together two organisations that are in deep conflict. One is the FA and one is the Premiership. Now, the FA, the last thing they want is to have their main tournament declassified. But they have to react to the reality that people put out weakened teams. They don't want replays. If there was one thing that the FA Cup was great for, was that Shrewsbury hold Liverpool and take them back to Anfield and get a big payday. That is the essence of the FA Cup.
But you can't tell me that the fans still don't want that, because they do.
I'm not sure, Grant.
Come on. Are you telling me that Shrewsbury Town fans don't want to go to Old Trafford?
Shrewsbury, yeah, because they're quite low down in the whole thing. But, you know, you take a middling Premiership team to a middling Championship team, I don't think they're bothered.
You don't think if Brentford drew Liverpool, got a draw at the Griffin Park and went up to Anfield for a midweek, the fans would go, oh, really, we've got to schlep up to Anfield?
Yeah, I think they would say, well, that's quite a long trip. That's an extra fixture card. And I think we are going to go up this year, and this is a distraction.
You know why I say this, Grant? You'll never convince me that.
You know why I say this? Because I see it here in Italy. You've got teams in Italy every single year that have snobbed the Europa League and before that UEFA Cup. Lazio's a great example this year.
Why is it different? It's different. We've had this conversation. It's different when you're playing, you know, Spartak Brückel Blurken from wherever, right? You don't know who they are. And that is a schlep. Going to the middle of... It's not racist. It's just an unpronounceable European club that are in the third division and somewhere in the Balkans. You don't know who they are. But the FA Cup, for Brentford to get a replay at Anfield, there is no way the Brentford fans wouldn't just lap that up.
No, they don't care.
You're out of your mind.
All right, we'll agree to disagree on that one. But remember,
this is because you support a team who've only ever played in the top division, because there's only three teams that are ever in contention. This, you've never had to be in a lower league playing
true.
A top.
That's absolutely not true. But anyway, we'll let that one pass.
All right, fine.
Right.
Fine.
So listen, on this same theme, I've got a goal now that I think we can both agree on.
Well, that's no fun, but go on.
Well, okay, well, maybe we can't. the weekend, we saw the debut in the Italian Serie A of the grandson of Cesare Maldini, who is also the father of Paolo Maldini. The son had his debut for AC Milan at the weekend and is the third generation to wear the red and black, and probably looks as if he could replicate what his granddad and his father did. Now, I can't think of three generations that have ever done that before. And certainly at that level, both Cesare, who lifted the European Cup, and Paolo, who obviously everybody knows, and now the grandson. Is that not amazing, Grant?
I think that is amazing, I have to say. I can't think of another three generations. I know Henrik Larsson played in the same team as his son not that long ago.
Yeah.
Out in Sweden somewhere.
Now, any time you mention Henrik Larsson, you do have to use parentheses, King of Kings. there's a lot of Celtic boys up there that if I didn't say that would give me a really hard time. Henrik Larsson, King of Kings.
Henrik Larsson, King of Kings. All right,
yeah, and his son.
Well, yeah, I know he and his son played in the same team. I know, what was his name? Who's the Forest player?
Clough.
Ian Bowyer. Ian Bowyer played with his son.
Nigel Clough.
In the same team. Oh. I know that much. I think Beckham might have had his son come on in some sort of charity game. No.
Yeah, okay.
But I know Henrik Larsson definitely played. And there's one guy, I think he's Finnish or Swedish.
It's not AC Milan.
There's a Finnish and Swedish father and son who played in the same international team, and the
but that's only two. Even if I gave you those, that's only two generations. I'm talking three.
No, it's the best I can come up with. That's all I'm saying. Rubbish. I can't think of three.
Did Fulham? Do you not have like three people from the same family and like inbreeding or something like that play in Fulham? Is it not? Do you not have?
I think we struggle to get three generations of fans. We're so crap most of the time. Never mind players. But no, that is amazing. That is amazing. I mean, I didn't see much of Paolo's dad, but Paolo Maldini was an absolute, just a sensational footballer.
That was very good as well. This boy, to be honest, also for the role he's playing, he's a kind of an attacking midfielder. I think the competition's very high these days globally in that role. So I'm not expecting a lot, but the fact that, you know, they can say that is just truly astonishing for a big club.
Absolutely. Do you know what? I've just remembered. It was Ida Gudjonsson. He got subbed off and his son came on for Iceland. There you go. There's a bit of trivia for you.
Good. Good. So I've got one last own goal.
I don't know what you want to talk about, but you know, I'm going to save mine till the end just because it probably feels like the appropriate place for it. So you go next.
Right. My last own goal is that I'm so disappointed having been involved in executive education and the provision of executive education that I didn't pay more attention up to now to the Saracens program of leadership, honesty and integrity. Because you know there was one. They were fucking selling this shit.
So what have you found out? Because I'm completely unaware of this.
Well, you know these things, you know, management, leadership, you know, learn the lessons of sport, take it into your business. They had a program that they branded up. I don't know who delivered it. It doesn't matter. It was their brand that was on it. And there was people from like Allianz and, you know, big corporates, big blue chip corporates that went to this place to learn about leadership, honesty and integrity.
but Rog, without having been to the class, you don't know exactly what they learned.
No, but let's say it was wonderful. Let's say it was the greatest course of all time. Is that something you're going to boast about now and say, I went to the Saracens course on integrity and honesty?
Yeah, you might find a few LinkedIn profiles being updated.
Yeah, exactly. But even there, the whole thing, I don't understand it anymore. They've been relegated, you know, something. What is, they've been docked 70 points or something? 70 points is, you might not, it's best not even starting next season because you're starting at minus 70. The point I'm making is I've lost control of the narrative here. I don't know what's going on. It seems that every week there's a knee jerk and let's hammer Saracens again. Are you following it any closer?
I've been spending all my time outside Rugby Nation, so that there's no reporting on rugby. But interestingly to me, Rog, this is just an example, I think, of the whole narrative game, right? This is what happens when the narrative shifts. And you know, Saracens were the superstars of rugby, and everyone fating them and lauding them and all this sort of stuff. But when the narrative changes and people feel like they've been duped, then it's amazing how bitter people are and determined to either cast these former heroes of theirs in bad lights or reveal every kind of blemish that they can find. You know, this takes us back to this whole WeWorks thing.
That's painful. I know what you're thinking.
It's the same thing, right? It's the same thing. Before WeWork, Masasson, genius, visionary investor, absolutely amazing guy. Post WeWork, I mean, the amount of hatchet job articles, good luck finding anything written positive about him. And that's because people were duped. They don't like having been tricked. They don't like having the wool been pulled over their eyes. And it brings us back to the very core of this podcast, right? It's about authenticity.
Yeah.
And people know authentic when they see it. And when they find that someone's been faking it, they get angry. So I totally get why you're reading all these hit job articles on Saracens, because people feel personally like they've been cheated by the dishonesty there.
Yeah. So that was my own goal of the week, mate. It's a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Well, the last thing I wanted to talk about was the terribly sad passing of Kobe Bryant. I was in Los Angeles last week when it happened. I was in that same fog. Looking out, quite amazed at how foggy it was. And, you know, I was in meetings when I came out of a meeting and heard that. And funny enough, it was a text from one of my mates in England that alerted me to it. And I just couldn't fathom it. I saw the name Kobe Bryant in this text and it just, I couldn't put it together. I couldn't put Kobe Bryant and the NBA legend together because I thought, well, how can he possibly be dead? And so I had this moment where I couldn't remember who Kobe Bryant was, if that makes any sense.
Wow.
And then it kind of sunk in and, you know, I stood there in shock, just reading through the stories. It was still breaking news at that time, you know, it happened 40 odd miles from where I was. And you just walking around, I was in Santa Monica at the time, and walking around there, just, you could see people just, every conversation you could tell by the look on people's faces what they were talking about. And, you know, it was an incredible tragedy, you know, not just for the guy's supreme talent, but I think for the man he'd become. And I think, you know, I remember his debut. I was a big NBA fan when he, as a 17-year-old kid, went straight to the NBA. So I've been a fan for his whole career. And yes, he had some major issues back in 2003, I think it was, you know, with a much publicized rape case that kind of went away.
You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. But this was, you know, he was a 23, 24-year-old kid then who'd had the spotlight on him since he was 17. And it did change him. It did change him and his outlook. And you know, like David Beckham and the big scandal that he had with Rebecca, whatever her name was. Rebecca Luce, that's it. You know, Beckham got through that and became an idol and a family man and a, you know, a true role model. And Kobe had also done that. And it was an absolute, a bolt from the blue to hear that. It was incredibly saddening for me. And having watched how people have reacted to it. And again, you know, coming back to that Patrick Mahomes story, reading personal stories that people have been putting up on Twitter and places, mm-hmm. about their interactions with Kobe, how, you know, he'd gone to help someone's, you know, sick son who was dying of cancer, and how Kobe, they'd asked if anyone could send them a signed shirt, you know, and Kobe insisted on going, you know, taking a shirt, signing the ball, spending an hour with his kid. And, you know, he would only do, the guy who wrote the article was a guy who worked with him on the PR team and said he did this all the time, but he would only do it if there was no publicity. Yeah. You know, so you read about this stuff, and it does reinforce the tremendous power for good that athletes do have, and athletes that aren't all about the bling and, you know, the trappings of success, but the athletes who are role models in their work ethic and their professionalism. You know, that's the one thing that's come out about Kobe from the other NBA players, just his intensity, his work ethic, the dedication he had to his sport, and how he drove everyone around him to be better. So, you know, it was an incredibly sad thing, I have to say. You know, sport lost a true great. And from what you read now that some of these stories are coming out, the world lost, you know, a truly good guy. And it was just an incredibly sad week for me.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you a lot. I must admit, for some reason, whether it was I was in Italy, I don't know, I can't remember, I kind of missed the whole Kobe Bryant thing. That I just lost interest in the NBA around that time and got a little bit confused with, you know, Shaq and Kobe and who was the man and everything like that. So I saw a lot of these clips recently for the first time. For example, the last game he played, that 60
points.
Yeah,
I watched that game. It was unbelievable.
I can't believe, you know, what he did in those last few minutes. You know, it's extraordinary. So, and then I read another thing I really liked about him was I tried to understand a little bit more about him. Apparently, he named one of his investment vehicles 13th or something like that. 13 Invest. And the guy said, well, why do you want to name it that? He says, because there's 12 motherfuckers that were drafted in front of me and I want to remember. Did you not read
it? Driven. He was 17 years old when he got drafted, right? That's the kind of chip he had on his shoulder about his own talents. He had no right to be pissed that 12 guys who'd all been through 4 years of college.
Couldn't
yeah,
take
absolutely.
It.
Yes, absolutely.
But listen, truly tragic, but one thing I want to ask you about, because you follow NBA law and you know the people involved. So I see a guy the other day with a blue tick. So he's somebody with a name. In fact, I looked him up. He's
this is on Twitter, yeah?
Yeah, he's an ex NFL player, I think.
Was he complaining about his Tesla being broken?
No.
No, okay, fine. No, no, it's like, because if he's a blue check, he'll be fine. Anyway, carry on. I digress.
Larry Johnson, his name is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, he played for the Knicks. He played for the Charlotte Hornets. Went to UNLV. He was one of the Running Rebels.
Right, so he's got a blue tick. I don't know the guy, but his tweet came up because somebody, whatever, and he's making this comment talking about LeBron either before the game or after the game or in one of his speeches that he made these days, who makes these gestures. He looks up, he makes this kind of like eye shape, and then he does this thing with his hands, which is apparently treble six. And, you know, you
what?
Yeah, and I'm seriously, then I thought, listen, the whole, certainly in the music business, the whole thing about who's in the Illuminati and who's not is a thing, you know? And you can see all the symbolism that they show every year around the Grammys and everything. And there's a whole rabbit hole down there that in some ways is quite entertaining. But this is a guy with a blue tick who is saying that LeBron is a Satanist, because if you look closely, he does this ritual every time before a game, which is, again, based on these books and Masonic books and Masonic rings and all that kind of stuff, Illuminati. And in fact, I actually went on to say that, you know, this whole thing was part of the fact that LeBron is about to overtake Kobe's points at record or something like that. And this is symbolic that the old had to be removed. But this is a guy with a blue tick, Grant, you know, so are you aware of any of this stuff? Does this ring a bell with you?
It does not ring a bell with me. I got a pair of blue pants. I don't know if that qualifies me to say anything about anything, Rog. But I have no idea. I mean, everything I know about about Satanism is, are you sure he's not dyslexic and he was talking about Stalinism?
No, Satanism, right, for sure.
Just checking. I have no idea. I mean, what I do know is once you go down the Illuminati rabbit hole, you can go in all kinds of directions. I have no Pizzagate. Knowledge of it. I don't really have any interest in it. I mean, this is complete news to me. I know that you're now going to send me down that rabbit hole.
I'm not. All I would point you towards is some of the gestures Alicia Keys was making whilst presenting the Grammys. It's the same pinching of the thumb and index finger and leaving the three others, which, if you think about it, then represents three sixes. And at the same,
how does that represent three sixes?
Well, you've pinched them together to make a circle, right? Which right. is the circle of the six, and then you've got three stems, which is your.
Oh,
middle.
I see.
You with me? So they do that with both hands, and if you look very
well,
closely,
isn't that six sixes?
Well, okay, but it's three sixes on both sides, and sometimes you get a pair of people doing just with one hand, but it's a thing, you know. And if you look at it, you can see a whole plethora of celebs and sports stars and music stars doing this, and it comes with some other symbolism as well. One of them is putting the two hands together and making the sign of the eye. And anyway, LeBron, before this game, goes through this whole law of the three sixes, the eye, and various other things. And this guy, repeat, you know him, I don't, but he's obviously somebody.
No, Larry Johnson, Big Mama, he was known as. He was a hell of a player.
How can this not be a big, big issue then that, you know, a senior guy, a colleague even, is calling LeBron out as the head of, like, Satanist cult, you know?
Roger, I've got to be honest, you've completely thrown me with this one. I have absolutely no idea about any of this. And frankly, curse you, because now I'm going to have to go and look for it, because it's just so out of the clear blue sky that I don't know what to say about it. I have no idea what to say about it.
You've got a fun night ahead of you, Grant.
Why do you have to do that?
Well, because it goes from that to the Clintons, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah, the deaths, to Epstein, Pizzagate, which takes in the McCanns and Madeleine McCann. And if you really want...
You'll be telling me that Paul McCartney's still alive next.
That is actually one of my favourites. You know, the one and only Billy Spears. That is that is absolutely one of my favourites. And in my quieter moments, I actually believe that until I think... There's no way another guy could have written the songs after 1966. You know, all the stuff they did afterwards.
Well, who's to say that guy didn't write them before 66?
Oh, no. Oh, did you see the tweet by Pete Best?
Yes, I thought that was genius. That was genius. For those of you who didn't see it, I think the official Beatles site or somebody put up a tweet saying,
official Beatles site.
Tell us how you got into the Beatles. And Pete Best tweeted, Paul McCartney rang me up and asked me if I wanted to join the band. I thought it was just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
How must that guy feel? I mean, like...
Pete Best.
How must he feel?
You know, there's...
He did nothing wrong. The only thing he did wrong was he was good looking and popular with the girls and they got jealous. That's all I think. So he gets canned.
That may be true. That may be true, Rog. But I mean, you must have had that happen to you all the time.
You know, all the time. You know what I get all the time? Somebody said it to me the other day. I'm out kicking my coverage.
You're out kicking your coverage.
Which, you know, there was a picture of me and my wife on Facebook or something like that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, clearly she's good looking and I'm not. So this guy, a friend of mine, says, Rog, you've always clearly been out kicking your coverage.
Listen, I've met your wonderful wife and...
it's true.
I got to say, yeah. I mean, I think that's a kind way of putting it, frankly.
I'll put that in my gravestone.
Yeah, yeah. Here lies Roger Mitchell. He outkicked his coverage.
I like great it. Stuff.
Which I have to say, just reminds me of the greatest plaque I ever saw in a park bench, which was it was somewhere in the UK, and it was a park bench overlooking this fields into the woods beyond it, and the plaque simply said, "In loving memory of Fred Smith, who hated this park and everyone in it." which I just thought was magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. Anyway, we got off track. Well, I guess that wraps it up for another week, Rog. I guess that wraps it up for another
week. It's been a busy week,
It has been a busy week. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. What have we got coming up next week, Rog?
Next week, well, we've got Caroline Rowland on the big interview. One of the people that delivered Qatar 2022.
Now that's the World Cup, not the nasty cough.
Yes. Creative, branding, judging BAFTA. One of the smartest women I've ever come across in this area. She's going to be telling us a little bit about so many things. Then we've got the captain with Brian O'Driscoll and some golfer. I don't know. Have you heard them before? Rory McLeod. Rory, what's his name?
Rory Mac someone. Yeah.
Yeah. He's on. I don't know what Giles is doing. Usually got people that are good. I don't know what he's doing with this.
He said he was going to get some big names, but
yeah. I mean, what the hell is he doing?
Rory. We'll have a word with him.
Yeah. Then we've got Duncan Castles, who is the founder of The Transfer Window, one of the top thinkers on where big money and transfers meet, where they don't meet. Very opinionated on Man United, very opinionated on geopolitics and football and why certain nation states buy into football. He'll comment about the window and what happened and what didn't happen. And then they've got you and I again at some point coming up.
This is great. We've got all these great guests coming on. We can just switch to autopilot and coast you and I, Rog. This is
absolutely. I thought that's what we had been doing.
Well, listen, all that remains is to thank all of you for tuning in again this week. Please do share the podcast, share the links with your friends. Help us get the word out about the captain's table. Giles is doing a fantastic job there with some wonderful guests. You can follow us on Twitter. You'll find us at EntertainedR. That's A-R-E, the word. You can follow me, should you feel so inclined, at T-T-M-Y-G-H.
And you can follow myself without a blue tick at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Rog, we're going to get you one of those blue ticks. It'll be my gift to you. You wait for it. I'm going to campaign. It'll be like the Oscar campaign. I'm going to make sure you get that blue tick.
Oh, but by the way, talking about that, one of the people that I do want to get on the podcast is somebody I work with called Rick Rubin, one of the big music producers, basically invented hip-hop crossover with the Beastie Boys and things like that. He's somebody I work with in Italy. He's apparently big mates with Jack Dorsey.
Okay. Well, this could be your way to a blue tick.
I have asked Rick.
Or a ban.
If he hears this, I'll definitely not get it. But the interesting thing about Rick Rubin is this. You can imagine who he is. He's that guy with a very long Gandalf beard. People will know Rick Rubin, very important guy.
Even I know Rick Rubin is.
Yeah. So I was saying to him one of the times we were at dinner, I said, so when you're not doing all your stuff, Rick, what do you do for entertainment? Do you watch TV, Netflix, what is it? He says, I don't have TV, I don't watch anything. Sometimes on my computer, but I don't watch anything. I say, nothing, sport, nothing. He says, I'm a big WWE fan. Really? I said, what, wrestling? He said, I'm obsessed.
Yikes.
And I said, well, why is that, Rick? Very authentic, get right to the core and the heart of artists and songs, and he's into artificial entertainment. And one of the reasons I want to get him on the podcast is he just articulated beautifully the success of the storytelling of wrestling in great, great detail. He could go through all the protagonists, the current ones, the previous ones, how their character arc had developed. It was this kind of narrative. And I said, Rick, you need to keep all this because this is golden. And I said, do you come on the broadcast? And he said, no, I won't. But if you come to Malibu, we can record it. So that may be one I do on my own, Grant.
All right. Well, hey, that I want to hear. I'll be very happy to sit back and listen to that, Rog.
Unless you want to come to Malibu as well, it's that would be fun.
Chances are I'll be there the way my year's going. All right. Well, look, we got sidetracked then, but everyone's heard all the blurb so far about lakes and Twitter handles and stuff. So I guess we just say goodbye. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. To the next time.